32. The Sentinel of Truth broadsheet offices didn't fit Bilming. Unlike the sleek modern designs, its building looked like a shack. An older wooden structure, only one story, with a peaked roof, bulging walls, and small windows.
"One of the old buildings," Kim explained, "from when this section of town held a lot of fishing shacks. The push to start knocking everything down and build anew came 5 years ago, but there are structures like this sprinkled throughout the city."
"Doesn't seem like it's been in operation lately," Wax said, noting the padlock on the door, the dark interior. "Is it still publishing?"
"Releases have been sporadic lately," Kim said. "I had to wait 6 weeks to read the end of the Survivor's Last Testament arc of Jack's explorations."
"Rusting idiot man," Wax thought.
Ever since the discovery of the Sovereign, who had ruled and helped the people of the southern lands, Survivor fervor had been at a high point. Sightings all over the city, particularly on misty nights. Jack, of course, had capitalized on this, and had spent years discovering Survivor artifacts in his adventures. It wouldn't be half as bad if the fool didn't mention Wax now and then. They knocked at a side door, and when they got no reply, they tried the door and found it locked. So Wax wrapped a coat tassel around his fist and prepared to smash in the window.
"Wax," Marcy said, "what are you doing?"
"Beginning an investigation."
"Let's wait a few minutes," she said. "See if the owner returns."
He stopped, his fist a few inches from the glass. "We have a writ of investigation. We can break in."
"If it's an emergency," she said, "and if we've tried other options. This is a private citizen's property, and we have no reason to believe the set is here. And unlike the apartment earlier, we have no reason to believe a crime has been committed."
"Let me do it," Wayne said, walking up to the window. "You can all say you tried to stop me, but I done pulled a Wayne. They'll let you off."
"It's not about what we can get away with, Wayne," Marcy said, putting her hand to her face. "It's about proper procedure. You can't just smash into any place you want to. The world is changing. People have rights. It makes our job harder, but it makes the world better."
Wax frowned, lowering his hand. "We can afford to wait a few minutes," Marcy said. "If we're right, we want whoever owns this place to work with us, and breaking in might turn them against us. If we're wrong, then we'll have ransacked someone's place of business for nothing." She glanced at the sun.
"It's lunchtime. The owner might be out. They are still putting out papers, after all, so we have reason to think they'll show up for work eventually."
Wax reluctantly backed down. He expected Wayne to complain, but the shorter man just shrugged and jogged over to a street corner food stand to get something to eat. Marcy and Kim settled down on a bench beside a small nearby park, leaving Wax to put his back to a well-groomed tree set into a little piece of earth with a low fence around it. Moments like this made him feel old, not just of body, but of mind. He seemed to represent something that was dying, the lone lawman. And, well, it was hard to mourn, because intellectually he agreed with Marcy. He'd voted for legal restrictions on constable authority. Society needed robust checks on everyone's power, even his, especially his. But at the same time, that made the world seem too big to fix. Out in the roughs, he could beat in a door and talk, or sometimes shoot, sense into anyone who needed it. It had made him feel like he could solve basically any problem. But that had been a false impression of control, hadn't it? Acknowledging that made him uncomfortable. It wasn't that the world was growing more complicated. It was that he was letting himself see it had always been complicated. A minute later, Wax heard something. He swore it came from the building. He narrowed his eyes, burning steel, tracking the blue lines around him to a few moving near the top of the building. An attic? He raised a hand to the others, then slipped out vindication. Someone was up there. He was certain of it. Had they simply not heard the calls earlier?
He dropped a bullet casing and launched off it, then landed carefully on the roof near where the shingles sloped past a small attic window, shuttered closed. Quiet though he'd tried to be, the metal lines moved sharply as he landed. Then they stilled. Mostly. They were quivering. He narrowed his eyes at the window. One of the shutter corners was broken, letting whoever was inside peek out. He could see a metal line leading right to the hole. A part of him felt cold because that metal was almost certainly a gun pointed at him. Shingles rattled under his feet as he engaged his steel bubble, the subtle push he'd learned to use to deflect bullets. It made the nails in the rooftop vibrate as they tried to escape the field. Vibrating, he thought, like that line ahead of me. That's a gun in the hands of someone who was trembling. He wasn't facing a set assassin. Carefully, he raised his gun to the side, pointed away from the window.
I'm a constable, he said loudly. I'm here to help.
Silence. Then finally a voice. Feminine, husky.
You're here to kill me, like you killed Tobal.
No, Wax said. I promise it.
He stepped forward. I'm looking for the people who killed him. If I were here for another reason, I'd have shot instead of spoken. More silence, long enough to unnerve him until finally the shutters swung open, revealing a short woman. She had frizzy gray-black hair and a disheveled appearance, a waistcoat buttoned with a few holes skipped, a long skirt that was rumpled as if it spent most of its life in a heap in a corner. She had dark bags under her eyes and a wan appearance, as if she'd been heavier once but had lost weight, like a couch missing some of its stuffing.
You, she said, lowering a rifle. Are you Dawnshot?
That's me, he said, relaxing. She brightened.
You're Jack's friend.
Jack's friend? Just because that idiot brought up Wax's name once in a while? He opened his mouth to object, but thought better of it.
I know of him, Wax said. Look, something is happening in this city. Something very dangerous. I followed the trail to Tobel's apartment, then here. Please. Did he give you something? Tell you something?
She leaned out, suspiciously scanning the streets.
Meet me below at the back.
She pulled the shutters closed, and he joined Marcy and Kim at the back doors as they rattled, numerous locks and chains being undone. Finally, she pulled the door open.
I don't normally talk to Connors, ever.
Scuttered voice, Wayne mumbled through a mouthful of something.
He walked up beside Wax and took another bite of what appeared to be grease and maybe some bits of meat wrapped in what might have been bread. Or a very large crepe?
But since you're friends of Jack, she said.
Sure are, Wayne said, slapping Wax on the shoulder. Jack and Wax here adventured together out in the roughs.
I guess then, she said, gesturing for them to enter, you're not that kind of constable. You're the other kind.
Yup, Wayne said. We're the kind what don't like uniforms and shoots people when they try to make us sign paperwork.
He took another bite of his wrap. What even is that? Wax asked as Marcy and Kim entered.
He called it chowder. It's good.
It looks disgusting.
Oh, mate. With street food, that's how you know it's good.
The building inside was musty and dark and had numerous trash bins by the door, as if the woman hadn't dared leave to empty them. She watched Wax, rifle in hand, though not raised, as if certain he'd turn on her at any moment.
Is Jack in the city? She asked. Available to help?
Wax said. No, he's on an adventure.
Don't suppose you can send for him?
She sounded hopeful.
Afraid not.
She frowned, eyeing him.
Oh, don't mind Dawnshot, Wayne said, nudging Wax. He gets coy about Jack sometimes.
He leaned toward the woman.
Honestly,
He's a little jealous.
Well, who wouldn't be? She said, then sighed and began doing up the locks on the door. Has he ever let you hold the Spear of the Red Sun?
Wayne looked at Wax, who gritted his teeth.
No, he forced himself to say. It's too powerful. Jack says I might accidentally awaken some zombies if I'm allowed to touch it.
The woman nodded, locks secured, then waved for them to follow her into the building.
Good, Wayne whispered to Wax. But the spear wasn't used for zombies. They was on the Island of Death, with Nikki.
How do you know? Wax hissed to him. I've read every one, Wayne said. Why wouldn't I?
I thought you couldn't read, Marcy said, brushing past them and following the woman.
Oh, I can read, Wayne said. But I'm dumb, see? So I can only read things what are dumb, too.
The woman led them through a corridor crowded with books, stacks of them, taking up almost every available space. In the next room were a large printing press, some buckets of ink, and boxes of lead type scattered about. Her picture on the wall, hanging askew and showing her in younger years, was captioned, Marga Dulcet, Editor-in-Chief.
So,
she said, running a hand through her disheveled hair,
you know who killed Topol? Was it those people with the golden hair living on the east side? They're some kind of fairy creature, I know it.
Actually, Marcy said, we think it was a secretive group plotting to start up the Ashmans again, and we worry they're working to create bombs of incredible power.
Marga nodded.
So you do know.
That was a test, Wax realized. Marga opened a doorway that revealed a set of old steps.
Well, then, follow me.
She led the way down, and Wax followed, waving for Marcy and Kim to stay back a few feet. The air smelled of old potatoes, spiders, and forgotten jars of something that might have once been preserves. Marga flipped a switch at the bottom, powering a set of electric lights swinging on wires. Covering the walls of the musty basement room were sheets of metal scratched in detail, filled with words and diagrams, letters and pictures all cramped up together.
Figured we'd write it all in metal, Marga said, just in case.